You're fine, thank you.
I think
we can start. Other members will join us because we run out of time.
Okay.
Yes. Morning, Mr. Jacobs.
Morning, Mr. King. Greetings, Chair, and everybody on the platform.
Greetings, Chairperson of the study group. You looked it. I forgot my stuff.
Thank you, my chair. You also look nice. I see it nice and hot in your province.
Yes.
Morning, chair. Morning, chair.
Morning,
how are you? I think you made a mistake. This is the small business portfolio committee and not a study group. Thank you.
I was addressing him as chairperson of my study group, not as chairperson of the portfolio committee. You didn't hear me well. I may even greet you.
I'm covered, Jay. I'm covered.
Okay. I may also greet you saying that, good morning, my son, member of the NEC of the DA. There's nothing wrong with that. I'm recognizing you. Thank you. Thank you so much. Honorable members, we have got the agenda before us. First item is opening welcome and the purpose of the meeting. The purpose of the meeting is to get an oral representation from participants who have opted to present orally before us. I believe we are in line with the Constitution. So the meeting is officially opened. I know that we have got double barren because plenary is also in session, but we do have gadgets. We have been given 3 gadgets. We have got laptops, iPads, and phones. So what we need to do is to lock both, but this one, and not that it is more important, it is just critical, as it has been prioritized even by the parliament itself, that we need to push it. So welcome back home after a long, long, long traffic. So you are warmly welcome. The meeting is officially open. Let us zoom to item 2, which is roll call and apologies. Can you take us through Bracking?
Maybe before I take you through, I see the end of Mr. De Villiers.
Honorable De Villiers.
Good morning, Chair, and good morning, fellow members of the committee. I hope you are all well. Chair, apologies for raising my hand so early in the meeting. But as you might have seen on the our WhatsApp group, I did put an excuse for today because I am a whip for the DA in the plenary today. So I have to attend the physical sitting, and I'm on my way to there. And Chair, I understand that we are trying to get this bill across the line as soon as possible, and I want us to work. But if we schedule committee meetings at the same time as plenary sittings, then it's impossible for someone like me who's got plenary duties to attend. And that takes away my right to hear the to be part of the deliberations and give my input for my party. So I really want to implore you, Chair, and I want to ask the committee, I don't think it is right that they double book us at the same time when we are in these settings, because they are taking away my right to sit in this committee and to take part in it. And I really want to object to the fact that we have to, in the 99th hour yesterday, we have to hear that we now have to sit at the same time as when there is a plenary. So I wanted to please be noted that my opportunity to take part in this deliberation is being taken away by the fact that this meeting is scheduled for this morning. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you. I believe... your message is clear, but there are some of the things which are above our powers. We didn't know that we'll have plenary at 10 o'clock. So Parliament has scheduled their schedules accordingly. So these ones of ours is according to the time frame of this bill. So I understand what you are saying, and you are excused. After all, here we are only listening to the oral submission, which will be available even in the YouTube for everyone to can listen to. So during the deliberation by the portfolio committee and with the department, we'll have that liberty to can benefit from those oral submissions. We are just going to listen to the 10 participants today. We're not going to take any part. So, but your point is clear, and I will also speak to our whip, but we'll check exactly what is it that is happening. I'm told this week it will continue like that. But today's meeting, presentation is only for today only. And then from there, we'll make sure that even should we have known, Honorable de Villiers, we will have scheduled our meeting late in the evening. It is also allowed. I still remember we were doing our virtual meeting with the entrepreneurs during late hours. So you are not evenly out of order. And I'm happy, Honorable de Villiers, but because you will always engage, you will always ventilate. So you are not wrong. You are right. But bear with us, Honorable Member. It is above our powers. In that order, you are released. And then let's proceed with the second item, which is apologies.
Madam Chair, I just want, before we start with apologies, I got load shedding and the network is very bad. So if I'm sometimes on and sometimes off, please accept my apology.
Apology accepted, Honorable Member. Thank you. Ebra King, do we have any apologies? Can you take us through?
Thank you, Chairperson. Good morning, Chair. Good morning, members of the committee. Chairperson, the apology was from Mr. de Villiers, who has just spoken for himself for now. However, we don't have anyone. So just to address what he has raised of maybe getting the communique a little bit later, the problem was that since we were sitting on Tuesday, we had to make an application to the House Chairperson. So we didn't issue the confirmation of the meeting before we get the approval from both the Office of the House Chairperson and from the Chief Whip of the Majority Party. Secondly, the approval that we given, it was according to the parliamentary program that all committees must not sit except those that are doing legislation. Hence, they gave us that approval, and they requested that members can do what the chairperson has done to double log in. So that's what I just wanted to put across, Chair. So in the platform so far, we've got the Honorable Chairperson, we've got Nkosi Mthuli, we've got Mr. Kruger, we've got Mr. Jacobs, we've got Mr. de Villiers, we've got Ms. Mathulelwa, we've got Ms. Tromelan. So those are the members that are already in the platform, and then I think others will be joining as we proceed. More than that, Chair, there are presenters that I wanted that indicated that they would like to make a presentation, though I may not mention all of them, but they are in the platform. We shall see them as the agenda is indicating. Thank you, Chairperson.
Thank you, Braking. I know that our officials here are always in order and you are always following the rules of the House. You came to my rescue. If we have been given permission as the Portfolio Committee who are dealing with legislation, I believe we are in order. Members who are committed to the House won't say they are absent, as Honorable de Villiers has indicated. They are also on duty. So we'll just note that Honorable de Villiers is part of us, but because he is a whip for today's meeting in the assembly, is also part of us. So thanks for that particular clarity. Let me also form officially welcome our participants in this platform. What we are going to do, we are going to apply the rules like we were doing during a public hearing. We have got only 15 minutes to present. It's not a must that you need to utilize that 15 minutes. If you may do it within 5 minutes or 10 minutes, it is also allowed. I won't read the names, but I will invite, I will request my secretary each time to invite participants accordingly. You are warmly welcome, and we really appreciate your efforts. We believe your inputs will beef up our bill so that we go and assist our society. So you are also warmly welcome at this juncture. Braking, I will hand over to you to invite our participants one by one. Mine will be to do the timing from my side.
Before Chair, can we adopt the agenda?
Oh, thank you so. Okay, thank you, Braking. Any mover for the adoption of the agenda, honorable members who are present? Honorable members who are on the platform, can we move for the adoption of the agenda, please?
We are running out of time. Before Chair, can I request that I missed something? I just maybe in the closing remarks, we just put one item just to look at the program as being updated, so that we may discuss maybe if there are time that clashes with others, we discuss that program.
Before the closing remarks. Okay, yeah. You may do so, Braking. I think it is in order.
Thank you. They can any mover then?
Any mover with that addition? Who was moving already? For the moving for the adoption. Any seconder? Any seconder, honorable members? Members, I'm inviting a seconder for the adoption of the agenda. We can't proceed before this agenda is properly adopted. What's happening with these members? Are they muted, failing to unmute themselves? Honorable Somelana, can you hear me? Honorable Jacobs? Braking, what were you saying?
I was saying I'm still waiting for a member to second the adoption of the agenda.
Yes, yes. I was just checking whether they are muted.
No.
Because I can see them. They are there on the platform, but they can't talk. Honorable members, I'm waiting for a seconder for the adoption of the agenda. Who's dealing with IT so that they assist us, Braking? Maybe members are failing to unmute themselves. Yeah, I'm waiting for any member to second the agenda. The adoption of the agenda has been moved by Inkosi Lithuli. I'm now waiting for the secondment so that we can be able to proceed.
Yeah, I second the adoption.
Thank you, Honorable Jacobs. We'll now proceed with our meeting. The agenda has been adopted with that addition of a program. Braking, you'll assist me to identify participants. You may invite the first participant for us, and the participant is given 15 minutes. I'll be timing. You must also assist me to time the speaker.
Yes, Chairperson, we've got, according to the program, we requested that we have start with Employer South Africa.
Thank you very much, Madam Chair, for the opportunity to make our submissions. Would it be acceptable for me to share my screen?
Yes, let me stop sharing this one and then I'll give you the right hosting, co-hosting.
Perhaps while we wait for that, an introduction from my side. I am Arno Ruit and I am representing Employer SA. I'd like to thank the committee as well as the chairperson for allowing us to make our submissions today. My screen is visible at this moment.
Yes, it is.
Yes, it is.
Okay. Thank you very much. So Employer SA is dedicated to representing the interests of businesses across various industries in South Africa, established to promote economic growth, foster collaboration, and advocate for favorable business conditions. Employer SA plays a crucial role in shaping the nation's economic landscape. Employer SA's membership includes companies engaged in diverse sectors such as finance, mining, transport, hospitality, and security. These industries are vital contributors to South Africa's economic development and employment opportunities. As a collective voice for employers, Employer SA is committed to addressing the unique challenges faced by its members and facilitating an environment where businesses can thrive. So the purpose of this submission is to advocate for the addition of a clause to the National Small Enterprise Amendment Bill that embodies the fundamental principle embedded in South Africa's constitution, namely non-racialism. The proposed amendment aims to enshrine non-racialism as a guiding principle within the section articulating objectives and functions of the agency as created by the bill. Non-racialism, as a cornerstone of post-apartheid South African constitution, signifies a commitment to a society where equal opportunities are accessible to all, regardless of their racial or ethnic background. Employer SA believes that this principle is not only a moral imperative, but also a key driver of economic growth and prosperity. By incorporating non-racialism into the bill, we seek to underscore the importance of creating an equitable and inclusive environment for small businesses. This inclusion will contribute to the development of a thriving entrepreneurial ecosystem, allowing for all South Africans, irrespective of their racial or ethnic backgrounds, to participate fully in the economic life of the nation. Now, before I delve into the core of our submissions, I wish to touch on the nature of small enterprises and the unique value that they offer to our country. So it's vital to recognize that the success of small businesses transcend the race or ethnicity of their owners. Small businesses play a pivotal role in driving economic growth and job creation in South Africa, irrespective of the racial background of the entrepreneurs who build them. Small businesses contribute significantly to economic activity and are responsible for around 34% of the gross domestic product and account for as much as 59% of South Africa's total employment. By fostering an environment where all small businesses can thrive, we increase the number of jobs available to our citizens, thereby addressing pressing issues of unemployment and supporting the development of rural and urban areas alike. Simply put, a diverse small business sector that is not shackled by racialized policies strengthens the entire entrepreneurial ecosystem. It fosters competition, encourages best practices, and results in a broader array of products and services for consumers, which is crucial for economic vibrancy. The proposed addition to the National Small Enterprise Amendment Bill aligns with this pivotal role of small businesses in economic growth and job creation. Ensuring non-racialism in the sector strengthens the ability of small businesses to flourish, which in turn accelerates economic development and job opportunities for all South Africans. Now, with that in mind, let's tackle the tougher issues. To fully appreciate the significance of enshrining non-racialism as a foundational principle within the bill, it is essential to reflect on South Africa's historical context of racial discrimination. In the apartheid era, which spanned nearly five decades, it was institutionalized and codified racial segregation and discrimination that created profound disparities amongst the country's population. These injustices had a devastating impact on South Africa's economic, social, and political landscape. Black South Africans in particular were excluded from mainstream economic activities and faced limited access to quality education, healthcare, and basic human rights, not to mention entrepreneurial support. This deeply entrenched inequality hampered the growth and prosperity of the nation as a whole. And perpetuating these racialized systems will never overturn it. At the end of apartheid in 1994, a historic turning point in South Africa's journey to inclusivity and equal opportunity was marked. As South Africa emerged from this dark chapter, non-racialism became a guiding principle in the nation's new constitution. By acknowledging this historical context, we can understand now why racialism or non-racialism is not merely a legal requirement, but a moral imperative for South Africa's continued growth and development. It is in this historical backdrop of apartheid's racial discrimination that we must now recognize the importance of upholding non-racialism as a foundational principle in our nation's future. Non-racialism stands as a cornerstone of the South African Constitution, reflecting the nation's commitment to building a just, inclusive, and equal society without re-entrenching the mistakes of our past. The South African Constitution firmly enshrines the principles of equality in its preamble. It unequivocally states that South Africa belongs to all those who live in it, regardless of their race, gender, or background. This commitment to non-discrimination is a legal requirement, but also a moral compass, guiding the nation towards a more equitable future where the shackles of racialism no longer hold us back. One of the Constitution's primary objectives is to foster reconciliation and nation building. Doing this, recognizing the scars of that apartheid runs deep in South Africa, and that this healing progress relies not only on addressing, but overcoming these historical injustices. However, it is certain that this cannot be done by utilizing the same tools of racial classification and division which scarred our society in the first place to now attempt to heal it. It must be recognized that non-racialism plays a pivotal role in this process, uniting the nation in its shared commitment to overcoming past prejudice and divisions. While the South African Constitution's commitment to non-racialism is a powerful statement of intent, it must permeate every aspect of society, including economic activities. The importance of promoting and actualizing non-racialism in the economic sphere cannot be overstated. A thriving and inclusive economy is a fundamental goal for any nation, and non-racialism is an essential prerequisite for achieving such growth. By ensuring that economic opportunities are not based on race, we unlock the full potential of all citizens, driving innovation, entrepreneurship, and economic prosperity. Doing so reflects a recognition of the errors of our past, cognizance of what is needed to bring about genuine change, and espouses an unwavering commitment to justice, equality, and human dignity. It honors the struggles and sacrifices of those who fought against apartheid and embraces the promise of a united, non-racial South Africa. We must understand that promoting non-racialism is not merely a symbolic gesture. It is a practical commitment to creating a more equitable and prosperous South Africa, where small businesses, regardless of the owner's racial background, can thrive and contribute to the nation's economic growth, to the benefit of all our citizens. By incorporating the clauses, is there any questions from members?
Project Pamela, will you please check your consciousness?
By incorporating clauses enshrining non-racialism within the National Small Enterprise Amendment Bill, it can become a powerful instrument for promoting non-racialism, equality, and inclusivity in South Africa's small business landscape. We believe that the additions as set out in our written submissions will align the bill with the constitutional values of our nation and contribute to a fair and equitable business environment for all. In conclusion, Employer SA firmly believes that in the potential of all South African entrepreneurs and the crucial role they play in the nation's economic growth and job creation. We advocate for an inclusive and non-discriminatory business environment where all small businesses, regardless of the race or ethnicity of the owners, have equal opportunity to thrive. The proposed addition to the Small Enterprise Amendment Bill is a significant step towards achieving this vision. It enshrines non-racialism as a foundational principle in the objectives and functions of the agency, emphasizing the importance of non-discrimination in financing small businesses. It is our commitment to foster an environment where entrepreneurship knows no racial boundaries and success is determined solely by one's dedication, innovation, and hard work. Thank you.
Thanks for the presentation.
Let's now invite the second participant. Assist me, Brakin.
Yes, Chairperson, it's going to be property point from Ms. Nogwanda Mutsisi.
Good morning. Good morning, honorable members of the committee. Am I audible?
Yes. It's one of the strategic methods
employed. You are audible. I'm audible. Okay. All right.
Yes.
May I please be granted the permission to share my screen?
Yes, you have been granted, no one.
Thank you. All right, is my screen visible on your side?
Yes, ma'am.
Yes.
All right. Once again, good morning, members of the committee, honorable members of the committee, and to fellow participants. My name is Unovanda Mutsitsi, and I represent Property Point. So without much ado, I will jump right into it. So mine today is to essentially amplify what we have submitted through our written submission. I will provide a contextual background on small business landscape in South Africa. From there, I will play just a short 2-minute video describing who Property Point is, what our mission and our focus are, and then I will then go into our inputs into the bill, some of our comments and recommendations. And then I will conclude with general observations. So just to paint a picture on the small business landscape in South Africa, small businesses, as you all know, as the previous speaker has also outlined, that they play a really vital economic role by serving as significant contributors to job creation, fostering economic growth, and really driving community development. In addition, their agility and innovation enables them to adapt really swiftly to changing market demands in the face of economic challenges. And on the flip side of the coin, these very small enterprises really face different hurdles, including difficulties in accessing both financial and non-financial support, navigating really complex regulatory environments, and contending with high competition. And so we really acknowledge as Property Point the vital role of small business in the economy, and as this bill also intends to address challenges and create an enabling environment, we as well do so on our end. And so I would just like to go on to the next slide and play just a short 2-minute video describing who we are.
Abel, you can't hear the sound. Maybe you've muted the speaker.
Oh, pardon. You can't hear the sound of the video?
Yes.
Okay. Oh, pardon. Let me do that. Okay, let's see if it's... Is it audible now?
No.
Not audible.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, I'll just move right along. But essentially, we as Property Point. Oops. Pardon for that technical difficulty. But yes, we really do believe in enabling sustainability for small businesses. We focus on assisting them to access markets, to access funding, and business development support. And so essentially we welcome the bill with some reservations, and our inputs specifically outline concern over the proposed amendments, which we find that should a careful socioeconomic impact assessment on small businesses not be considered and perhaps conducted, then the bill would be to their detriment. And so we submit that these recommendations, or rather concerns, just require further attention and some adjustments. So the merging of the three entities into CIDFA, we welcome this provision just with a concern rather, or a recommendation that the objectives of the agency as stipulated in the bill are to, amongst others, promote a service delivery network which increases the contribution of small enterprises to the South African economy. And so we would then advise that the Ministry of Small Business Development just clarifies the definition and the components of a service delivery network, just to ensure legal clarity, consistency and interpretation, and implementation across different provinces and government departments. Also just to ensure accountability. Next, we have the Ombud services. So we recognize that the establishment of the Office of the Small Enterprise Ombud Service, as outlined in the bill, is really a positive step to address the challenges faced by small enterprises. And we also acknowledge that this dispute resolution mechanism can provide a way for small enterprises to access inexpensive and flexible procedures for the resolution of their complaints. We do, however, propose that our concerns just be taken into consideration before the establishment of the office be considered. Firstly, would be the financial implications of setting up the service. As stated in the bill, the initial estimated cost would be 3.5 million rand. And as we all know, on the 1st of November, when the finance minister painted a really rather bleak picture of South Africa's economic and fiscal standing when he presented the medium-term budget policy statement. And so in that, there was quite a clear indication that, you know, worsening conditions really do lie ahead for small businesses. And a big concern is that government may need to reduce funding for programs or initiatives that support small enterprises. And so we then recommend that a diverse, innovative and sustainable funding strategies be leveraged on to ensure a more sustainable upkeep of this office. Our second concern would be the possible overlapping of services. There are already several ombuds and channels available for small enterprise owners. And so considering the financial implications of the venture, we propose that perhaps the scope of existing structures be expanded. And this could be done by possibly having a dedicated desk for small businesses within these structures, right? But of course, the reality is that the desk would likely be inundated with queries as a result of the volume. And so a dedicated budget towards increasing capacity and technological systems to manage communications and the feedback loops would be necessary. We then move on to the provision that states that there will be a national review of small enterprises. We welcome this provision as we know that this will just serve as a comprehensive evaluation tool for assessing the status, challenges, and opportunities for small enterprises. A little concern to note there is that there is a lack of a specific timeline for when this review will be completed, and so we then recommend that this provision be inputted, and perhaps proposing that it be conducted annually just for a more comprehensive assessment. Then lastly, the transitional arrangements of CEDFA's merger. We note that the objective of this is to ensure a smooth transition with minimal disruption in services and support. But as outlined previously with the medium-term budget policy statement, that budget cuts, worsening conditions are looming. And so, again, worsening conditions for small businesses lie ahead. So we propose, again, that government funding be used to unlock private sector funding by providing guarantees, grant funding, and first loss schemes. Secondly, we note concern over the loss of specialized knowledge and expertise when this merger comes about. We also note potential unemployment, where essentially there's a risk of job displacement or role redundancies as the roles and responsibilities are restructured, which can have a negative impact on the employees of the original entities. We also note the adaption delays and challenges that essentially establishing a new institution not only requires a lot of resources, but it also demands time. And so it may take time for the newly merged SEFA to adapt to its expanded role and responsibilities, potentially causing disruptions in services and support for small businesses during the transition period. And so just to conclude, we appreciate the progressive nature of the bill. We welcome the efforts that are being made by the Department of Small Business Development to really improve avenues for supporting small businesses, creating an environment conducive to their growth. And we further appreciate particular efforts to really streamline business processes, creating one-stop shops, improving overall business ease and the like. But we do emphasize that the crucial role of a socioeconomic impact assessment system should be applied to not only ensure the proposed measures align seamlessly with broader economic goals, but also accelerate small enterprises, of which the bill is intended for, as well as careful budgeting strategies will be really pivotal in realizing the practical implementation of the provisions, and continued consultations with small enterprises will really contribute to the implementation strategies that are responsive to the needs of our small enterprise ecosystem. Thank you very much. My presentation ends here. Thank you, Chair. Thank you, honorable committee members.
Thank you for the presentation. Rakim, can we invite the third speaker, the third presenter?
Yes, Chair, it's going to be Longmark Equity Partners from Katfiso Mashele.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I can show my face for 2 minutes just to save bandwidth. Let me do that so that you know that I'm not a computer, I'm a dean. Get in there, show video. If it cooperates, it will. If it doesn't want to cooperate, it won't. Show start video. Doesn't want to cooperate. Okay. Let me not waste any more time. By way of introduction, I am the CEO and co-founder of Longmark Equity Partners. We are a registered financial services provider, SSP 50201, under the Financial Services Conduct Authority. I've been in the financial markets for 25 years. I've worked for at least 3 banks in South Africa and 2 overseas. I've worked also in the corporate sector, as well as in the state owned enterprise sector. Madam Chair, can't you hear me? Oh, sorry about that. Anyway, so as I was saying, I've also worked for South African Airways, both in aviation finance and as head of global procurement. And lastly, I was chair of WBOA, which is the Women Building Our Africa Financial Services Cooperative. Initially started as finance chair and ended up as chair of that board. If I may now just share my screen. Am I permitted?
Proceed, please.
Okay.
We can hear you.
Yes, it's fine. I'm just getting into the business of sharing my screen. Sorry.
Okay.
if it will show up. There it is. SB. There it is. Can you see it?
Yes, it's visible.
It's visible. I'm trying to make it, expand it so that it's full screen. I don't know if it is. But perhaps I should. Yeah, it is.
Yeah.
Okay. I mean, I think I won't take too much time, but our view around the committee submission today is that we need to root ourselves in reality, and we also need to root ourselves in what's possible. And we will, by way of example, demonstrate that what we do we are essentially a product house. We create products for clients, we provide advisory services in the financial services sector. And we white label products, so we create products for major institutions in the country, and they sell them as their own, but we run the mechanics and the financing behind, we run the numbers behind them. But when we were asked, and I was asked to look at, you know, the bill and what and how it will help the South African small medium enterprise, I was reminded to kind of revisit the history of SMME development in South Africa, going slightly back perhaps to 1994, you know, the advent of Kula, the advent of Sobhuku, the growth, or at least the enactment of the act around CIFA. And now, so our view is that, you know, when you try and do these types of things, at least have a sense of the geography that you're operating in, have a sense of the sectors you're trying to promote, because you can try and do everything. You can try and do everything for everybody. And what ultimately happens, you end up doing very little for very few people. And so we put this up here to demonstrate that when you do try to create a product for somebody, you need to have some parameters. You need to have things that you want to look at and at least not forget about. But ultimately, there's an intersection point in the middle of all of that. Whether you're looking at a different part of the country, a different part of the continent, whether you're looking at a different sector, whether you're talking about the automotive sector, agri-processing, whatever you are doing, at some point, and whether you're looking at debt, equity, and that's what we mean by asset class, you have at some point have to say, where does all of this geography, the risk, the return profile, and possible maximization of return, where does it all meet? And which sectors must we focus on to try and attain this? And so, by way of review, I think this is important. I as I said, you know, looked at the CBDA. I've worked and interacted with the Prudential Authority, both at the level of submitting reports and at the level of requesting and getting support capacity for regulatory compliance, capacity for support from within the CBDA around our own board membership training and our own membership training. And so I want to say, you know, as far as the CBDA is concerned, I kind of think to myself, you know, where does the CBDA belong? And at the moment, it seems, yes, destined for a home. But our fear, and that's what we've submitted, our fear is that it doesn't look like much has been much thought has been given to the very specific needs that the CBDA serves. And so we what we did is that by way of review, we said, okay, let's look at what the key DFI institutions in South Africa actually do and what they themselves say they are formed for. We start with CIFA. It says it wants to provide development finance to SMEs and corporates. Great stuff. We welcome that. Fantastic. And so on. You look at CEDA. CEDA collaborates with an ecosystem, stakeholders, allocates, etc. I mean, you can read all of this yourself. And then it's essentially a capacity building organization. So our sense is, if the idea is to combine the strength of CIFA and the strength of CEDA to come up with this new entity, well, then CBDA and its current structure would perhaps find a happy home. But our fear is that if you look through the entire sector of the DFI funding institutions, there is a lot of repetition, and for good reason. I mean, the DTIC says that the reason they have these overlaps is really they want to have a catch-all situation. They don't want to miss anybody, small, large, and women, rural, and otherwise. But again, as we said earlier, if you try to do that inside one organization, but you are not very clear about what that central meeting point of this organization is, then perhaps the issue will again rear itself, where you have a lot of organizations with the same stated objectives, but when you drill down into whether they do in fact deliver on those stated objectives, you walk away with a very unfavorable view of what these organizations have been able to achieve. There are many that have achieved a lot, but I am certain that members of the committee, if they look through all these brands, all these logos within the development funding institution framework and landscape of South Africa, they are in fact phenomenal if they did everything that they said they would do. Where things fall apart is where the one organization assumes that the other is doing what it is also doing, and therefore it will all come out in the wash. We will all come out helping SMEs in one form or another. It does not work. It means that within each organization, within the IDC, they'll have an SME fund. They will choose a sector that they want to focus on. Agro-processing, automotive and transport, and all of these, by the way, gel and work with what the DTIC spells out as priority sectors for growth, for tradability or tradables versus non-tradables. But we must also say to ourselves, when we look at the South African economic structure, it has not changed in character since 1994 significantly. South Africa is still dominated by agriculture. It's still dominated by mining. And it's of late now dominated by services in banking, financial services, and telecoms. That is what South Africa exports. But the labor absorption rate of these industries is, on the mining and agriculture side, diminishing. On the services side, it does not deal with the historical legacy of issues that we all, I would want to believe, agree are the problem in South Africa. It cannot deal with massive unemployment of unskilled labor. The only hope we have lies in this particular page that I'm showing, which is a very key focus on SMEs, but a very targeted approach to SMEs, not just at the level of the coverage, the level of sector that we want to cover, but also at the level of product. And that's where we want to end this. We'd be saying, look, if you look at the CBDA and its stated objective, it aims to facilitate the development of a competitive, accessible, and sustainable corporate banking sector that empowers communities. Noble, great. And then add to that it provides development finance to SMEs and corporates. That is stated on its website and stated in its documents, but it has not done that. Okay? It has not done that. It has, by its nature, because of the common bond, should be able to cover all sectors in the South African economy, especially at the lowest ends of the economy. Women, just to deal with this in short, Women Building Our Africa had membership and common bond members who were in the Eastern Cape, some in Pretoria, but the common bond was that they were women. And many of them professional women, and some, in fact not many, some professional women, doctors and lawyers and chartered accountants, but others, or the majority thereof, women in rural towns, women in rural, we could not even reach some of those members because of digital issues. So if you look at what the CBDA mandate is and was, it has done a brilliant job of covering capacitation of board members, capacitation of CFIs and the like. But it has not provided, or it has not leveraged its position in government where it has access to all those other DFIs to bring in a dedicated fund of a sort, which could then leverage private sector funds. I note what Nogwanda is saying, which and I in a sense say, oh, it looks like we were working on a similar presentation. But the issue is this, and I'm about to conclude. The issue is this: we can have all those great organizations that you know are giving you a brand and for. We can have them, but if they don't have a service model, if they can't say to you, listen, even when we are put in under this new organization, what is it that we will in fact be doing? Will we then be also and you know taking on the responsibility of capacity building? Will we be taking on the responsibility of seriously providing funding to SMEs? Will we be taking the responsibility of creating products that the market will or is able to put forward to SMEs in terms of funding? I believe if you try and do that without taking cognizance of the specialized nature of CFIs, their requirements, and the role that the CBDA has played, then you are going to do exactly what you're trying to avoid. You're going to kill the very idea. Yes. You're going to kill the very idea. Well, in sum, we're saying, look, I mean, let's play to our strength. There is enough capacity within government. Let's make let's convert the bill into a targeted outcomes bill, and not just a bill that speaks very boldly about an ambition, but does not in fact create institutions that make the entire thing work. That is where I will stop now. It's all there. If you require me to put through to you, I can send it.
Please do so. Thank you so much.
I will do that.
Braking, the next present.
Thank you, Chair. It's going to be BACF Africa. Moshe Swart. Mr. Kagiso, can you stop sharing? Thank you. Is Moshe in? BACF Africa? Okay, Chair, it seems as if it's not in. Let's go to DGP's network, Rashida Pandey.
Hi, good morning, honorable members and fellow presenters. I am supporting the DGP's network presentation. In fact, the presenter will be our program director, Mr. Sifiso Ndwandwe. which he'll come on after you give me the permission to just share my slides, and then we'll proceed, please.
Yes, I've made you a co-host.
Thank you, sir. I'll just share my screen. Mr. Ngwande, can you just please indicate that you are here while I share my screen?
Yes, I am here, and thank you very much to the members of the committee and everybody present. I hope I'm audible.
Yes, we are audible, and then wouldn't mind if you can just show your face for a minute to save your bandwidth and then proceed without your camera.
Okay, thank you. So that you also
put a face.
Put a face, you make sure you are talking to not AI, but a real human being. I hope that shows. I don't seem to see. Are you able to see any trace of me? I'm not able to see my face.
Now I can see you. No, thank you.
Okay, thank you. Thank you very much.
Please proceed, Mr. Ngwande.
Thank you very much. And again, thank you very much for the opportunity, and because of the scarcity of time, and I will proceed. And we are making this verbal submission following a written submission that we made. And this is a community of practitioners and players in the ecosystem through a project called DigiBiz. Then you will hear a little bit about the project DigiBiz in a little while. Next slide, please. And yes, my name is Sisonon, as mentioned, and again, I'm presenting this on behalf of the network of over 9,000 practitioners and entrepreneurs and researchers across the ecosystem in South Africa. Next slide, please. First and foremost, we want to make this point clear. We want to focus primarily on the provisions for the ombudsman in the BLO. We decided we needed to focus on that, and the conversations within the network have been focused on that because we think it is a game changer, and we are excited about the possibilities that are presented by the establishment of this institution. So our first point is that we have a very strong support for provision for the Office of the Small Business Ombudsman, and we think that will address massive problems that we're all familiar with. Next slide, please. And obviously the context, I will not go into that and waste time. We know the thousands, in fact, as mentioned in the recent National Treasury report, that over 344,000 invoices valued at over 32 billion rand were paid by national and provincial government department much later than 30 days. And 75,000 of those valued at almost 7,000 were still not paid even after 30 days. And so we know that there are huge problems when we're talking about the government sector now, but if you look at local government and if you look at the private sector, you'd see that the situation is much more dire than this. Next slide, please. So in essence, we're saying the problems are huge, and therefore we do need the Ombuds Office, but we need a very well-resourced and organized office that is capacitated and resourced to be able to deal with the job. Now, who is the DigiBiz network that I've been referring to? The DigiBiz network is basically a network of active players in the ecosystem, a combination of practitioners, those that are working in the policy space, those that are in research, academic institutions, practitioners, but also entrepreneurs who have come together through this project to actually foster and drive small business growth and job creation and social inclusion through the adoption of digital technologies. For us, we are very passionate and we find a special space, I think, conversations across the ecosystem for conversations around how do we support entrepreneurs in adopting digital technology to actually grow their businesses, reach more clients, and actually be profitable. I've already mentioned that we have over 9,000 participants. Over 2,500 of these participants in our network actually regularly participate in our ongoing activities, which are regularly conducted online in the main. So we've got many workshops that we have and we discuss best practices, and we have various committees of practice, and we publish various guides and success stories, all of this in driving best practice and ensuring that all that we do is actually drives the fortunes of small business in our economy and develops local economies positively. Next slide, please. And DigiBiz is a collaboration, and at the center of it is the Entrepreneurial Planning Institute, which is presenting this report. But we have various partners that actually have made DigiBiz possible. Caras for Growth is one of the organizations that's part of the partnership. The University of Western Cape is one of the partners, but we have been ably supported by the RISA Fund, which is a UK aid fund that has been granted to us to be able to actually get this work going in 2023. So very excited to have had this partnership, and hopefully we will take that project forward in 2024. Proceed again. Yeah, the DigiBiz program is aligned to the MISET policy master plan, and we have identified two particular pillars of those that are identified in the plan that we have aligned in supporting. First is information asymmetry and the shortfall in service delivery, and especially in reaching rural places and townships and underserved areas. So that for us is quite important. Next, please. Yeah, so this is the summary of the DigiBiz program. It has three key components. There is a coaching and training on the uptake of technology and the impact of technology on small businesses. We have had 40 of those that have gone through an intensive support over the period. And we have a very vibrant online platform that has a network element, but also various COPs, like I've shared, that actually continuously discuss specific themes that affect the delivery and the quality of delivery of services to small businesses. And we also run various surveys, and an exciting survey that we've just concluded that will be presented in our next coming workshop. Next, please. Yes, we are online. We have a Facebook page. We can reach. We have also WhatsApp, very active in various platforms, social media platforms, which we participate in. And that's how our network is actively involved in the work that we do. And it's as easy as click and you join and you participate. Next, please. Now, for us, we are focused on the theme of resourcing the ombudsman. For us, it's quite important, and it's important to make a huge difference in driving the mission and vision of the ombudsman, making sure that SMEs are supported. So we have discussed this quite intensively in our various committees of practice and workshops, and had webinars. We have had many interactions around this theme, and we come up with several observations that we'd like to share with you, which may refer as maybe recommendations. First, that digital tools offer avenues for innovation in service delivery, allowing institutions to introduce new and creative ways to support small businesses. It allows government institutions supporting small businesses to be more impactful and cost-effective, especially the ombudsman. Now, for us, we would like the committee to make a special note of this fact, that The digital economy is not in the future. It is here and it is happening in all spaces of our lives. And therefore, it is important that existing and future institutions that are working with small businesses take this very seriously, that if they are to reach small businesses and serve their needs effectively, they've got to also be very digitally aware and tooled and resourced to be able to do this. So for us, we are supporting the fact that we would like to the Ombud to speak, especially because this, as a new institution, to really take this seriously, to look at digital tools that would make it reach much more effectively small businesses, but also encouraging the merger of the three institutions that are coming together to actually use digital innovation and digital tools to access and reach and the needs of many small businesses. So that's the first observation. Secondly, and it is essential to access to have access you know, accessible communication channels. And obviously, we know that WhatsApp, mobile, and web interface, and AI now, which has become quite popular, are made available to process efficient services and prevent also misuse. So it's important that the Ombud takes this into consideration. So next slide, please. And for us, it's key in the use of digital technology. Accessibility is the key, and it's important that we have automated communication technology which combines an in-person support through front desk in other small business support agencies. We know that there are these agencies serving small businesses. You may have these front desks that are serving them, but have these work together, and it's important so that you don't have this overload and long queues in front of small desks with lots of queries from small businesses that do not get served or addressed. Next, please. The handling of disputes, again, we are making this submission that needs to be organized in a way that allows for informal resolution to be the first port of call, and then the use of digital communication tools, then mediation, if feasible, with a formal finding by the Ombud as a last resort. So the first, we want to be make sure that at an informal level, this is resolved as quickly as possible, but obviously escalated and using the technology as communication tools to facilitate the mediation and to eventually assist the Ombud to make formal findings. Next, please. The mandate to investigate is a key element, and many small businesses may find the lodging complaint may be bad for business. We know that for a fact, that it depends. If you have one major client that you have a gripe with, there is always a danger in the mind of an entrepreneur whether to report that client and endanger future income and future business. And so it's important that the Ombud goes beyond what is reported and looks at trends and find institutions that may be causing problems for small businesses and investigate these and make sure that these are done. Next, please. And again, it's important that existing, monitoring is very important for existing and new laws that affect small businesses. Now, we may be operating in this existing environment, but there are many laws that actually offend small businesses, the operations of small businesses. And I think the Ombud must also have the responsibility to make sure that these are sought out, new and existing laws, and these need to be identified and resolved. So we think that the Ombud must have that responsibility as well. Next. Now it's important that we are talking about the era of technology, and it's important then that there is education information that is shared, and this must be shared across many networks, including DigiBiz, and information especially about DigiBiz, about the Ombudsman, needs to be widely circulated and shared across many platforms, and so that these are accessible, and chambers and associations and small business support organizations, government and non-government must have this information. Next, please. Now, the proposed advisory council may also use information from the ombuds to identify and conceptualize trends for the benefit of the ministry and the private and small business. This is why it is important that the digital transformation is not just for the ombud. It should be for all the institutions and for small businesses, because then you can have shared information and shared data on small businesses, which then allows for more effective service support to small businesses. And again, we know, and I've just made this point, that there are data points in the various institutions working with small businesses and government agencies at all levels, that if we use digital solutions, we are able to integrate this and provide much more comprehensive and effective support to small businesses cost-effectively. Next, please. And again, it's important that the issue of inclusivity is quite important. We must not now create a digital divide, because if we don't support small businesses to access digital technology, we may just be causing the danger of the digital divide, where we're leaving small businesses behind. So it's quite important that all businesses are supported to have access regardless of their size and location, and have equal success access to support services through the digital tools. Now, it's quite important as well, as the Ombuds Office being set up, that it must aspire for global competitiveness, and institutions that have the power of digital tools position themselves as leaders in the global landscape. And it's important then that we can use the digital tools to actually produce best practice and share that with the rest of the continent and indeed the rest of the world. Yeah, there are a few examples, and I won't take the time to go through that, but I've identified quite a number of examples, almost many countries in Europe and America that have actually used and adopted digital tools to actually make sure that their ombuds offices are more effective and deliver cost-effective services to small businesses. I've just quoted here Singapore, Canada, and Australia, and you can count many other countries. In South Africa, we still lagging far behind in the ombuds area. To summarize, Mr. Chairman, we believe that adopting digital tools in daily operations of institutions, and I mean here all the institutions supporting small businesses, is very essential for efficiency, for accessibility, for cost effectiveness, and overall advancement of small business ecosystem. And it allows institutions to better serve the needs of small businesses and contribute to their sustainable success, leading to job creation, local economic growth, and alleviation of poverty and promotion of social inclusion. Now, this is important for us. We would like to really emphasize the fact that all these institutions that are working with the small businesses must really adopt digital tools and really transform digitally, so that they can actually work with small business much more efficiently. And it will also reduce the cost that these organizations currently spend in setting up offices and infrastructure that try to reach small businesses in all the communities. And we'd like to urge that the ombuds in particular has a great opportunity as a new institution to actually build this into their plan and make sure that it is part of their strategic operational plan in the early stages of its delivery of services. Would like to thank you. The next closing slide. Would like to really thank you very much for the opportunity for us to present. And we, like I said, we're presenting these recommendations on behalf of the network that we've been working with over the past year of over 9,000 members across the country. who feel very passionate about the work of the role that technology can play in the promotion and the development of our economy, particularly for small businesses. And we have a few quotes for some of the members who have expressed perhaps some of the value that they find in using technology to support the small businesses, and particularly for the Ombud to do that. We would like to thank you very much on behalf of the DGB's community, and hope that this is useful in your fair engagement. Thank you very much, Mr. Chairman and members of the committee.
Thank you. Thank you so much. Thanks for the presentation, and we'd like you to forward it to our secretary. Thank you. Can you call the next participant, please?
It's KP Consulting by Kumo Rasroka.
Okay.
Kumo?
Good morning.
Good morning.
Right. How's everyone doing this morning?
Well, I'm fine, baby girl.
All right. Okay. I will not be presenting. I will send through my slides as soon as I am done with my presentation. I am Kumo Rasoroka, the heart and soul behind Kumo Pensi Consulting. Today, I'm here to discuss the National Small Enterprise Amendment Bill and its implications for businesses in our dynamic sector. At Kumo Pensi Consulting.
Is it possible to see you?
All right. Okay. Let me.
You'll see it off.
Yes. Okay. All right. Oh. Okay. Let me connect using my phone quickly. I think this camera is acting up. All right, please let me in. I'm connecting from my phone for video.
Recording in progress.
Right. Okay. All right. Okay. So as I was saying, at Kumo Pensi Consulting, we specialize in a range of vital IT services, including software design and development, IT managed services, data analytics, UX design, and more. Our expertise extends to areas crucial for modern businesses such as cybersecurity, biometric as a service, software as a service, and cloud solutions. We are dedicated to providing innovative solutions that meet the evolving needs of the digital era. My path in the world of technology and entrepreneurship has been marked by both challenges and significant achievements. I'm honored to have been recognized as a finalist for the Africa Tech Women in Tech Award, acknowledging our impact and dedication in the tech industry. Furthermore, my nomination for the Women in Africa JAMIFEM 2023 program highlights our ongoing commitment to innovation and leadership. Kumo Pensi Consulting's journey is a reflection of our team's dedication and hard work. Our recognition as a Startup of the Year finalist and our membership in the Information Technology Association underscore our commitment to excellence and staying abreast of technological advancement. So I stand here today, not just as a founder of Kumo Pensi Consulting, but as a voice echoing the experiences and hopes of countless small business owners across South Africa. our journey as entrepreneurs is often painted as a path of innovation and freedom. Yet the reality we navigate daily is a complex labyrinth of challenges, some created inadvertently by the very frameworks meant to empower us. We appreciate the strides taken in this bill, notably the consolidation of key agencies into SEDFA and the establishment of the Small Enterprise Ombud Service. However, it's vital that these changes are not just structural, but functional and beneficial at grassroots levels. We see the merging of SEFA, Cooperative Bank Development Agency, and the CEDA into SEFA. Each has a distinct mandate, financial support, cooperative banking, and enterprise development. If efficiency is the goal, then a clear operational strategy is vital. For instance, if we aim to streamline financial support, then integration must lead to faster and more accessible funding processes. There's a need for a clear transition plan detailing how the unique strengths and mandates of the merged entities will be preserved. SEDFA should have specialized departments focusing on the distinct needs of different sectors. With the consolidation, what key performance indicators will be used to measure success? The bill should outline these new KPIs, ensuring they reflect the integrated objective of SEDFA. The document, right, underscores the importance of financial resources for small enterprises. However, the intricate details regarding how this financial access will be streamlined remain ambiguous. Delays in securing funds have tangible consequences. A case in point is the Gauteng Enterprise Propeller, GEP. Many enterprises, including ours, face agonizing wait times for funding decisions. Our own application, right, submitted in September 2022, has gone unanswered for over a year. Such delays hinder our business momentum. By the time funds are disbursed, if they do ever get disbursed, the market niche we aim to capture could already be saturated, which can spell numerous downstream consequences. These setbacks stall our expansion plans and bring potential repercussions, and it's not just about the money. It's about the missed opportunities, the stunted growth, and the dreams deferred. So, in considering international best practices for government models that effectively support small business financing, one standout example is the Small Business Administration in the United States. The SBA is a U.S. government agency that provides support to entrepreneurs and small businesses. Its mission is to maintain and strengthen the nation's economy by enabling the establishment and viability of small businesses and by assisting in the economic recovery of communities after disasters. So it has these key features, right? Loan guarantee program. The SBA helps small businesses obtain needed credit by giving the government guarantees to loans made by commercial lenders. This reduces the risk to lenders and makes them more inclined to provide loans to small business. Microloan program. This program also provides very small loans to startups, newer businesses, or growing small businesses. The SBA, it makes funds available to specially designated intermediary lenders, which are nonprofit community-based organizations with experience in lending and technical assistance. The SBA works with federal agencies to award at least 23% of all prime government contract dollars to small businesses. It also provides small businesses with subcontracting procurement opportunities, training, and technical assistance. These are low-interest loans to businesses of all sizes, private nonprofit organizations, homeowners and renters, following a declared disaster. So adopting an SBA-like model in South Africa could significantly bolster the financial support infrastructure for SMEs. This could include developing a loan guarantee scheme similar to the SBA's approach. South Africa's government could offer guarantees on loans made by commercial banks to SMEs, reducing the perceived risk and encouraging more lending to this sector. Establishing a microloan program. Implementing a program to provide small short-term loans to small businesses, particularly in underserved or disadvantaged communities. This could stimulate entrepreneurship at the grassroots level. Setting quotas, when you talk about government procurement, right? Setting quotas for government contracts to small businesses can open up significant opportunities for SME growth and development. By incorporating aspects of the SBA model, South Africa could create a more nurturing and supportive environment for small businesses, addressing many of the current gaps in the funding and support. And then number two, the bill's general mention of cooperation with the FSCA, it lacks operational specifics. In Germany, the success of the KfW Development Bank lies in its collaborative approach with private banks. The KfW offers low interest loans to SMEs underwritten by the German government, reducing the risk for private banks. This model stands out for its ability to balance risk while extending substantial support to SMEs. Its effectiveness is seen in the quick processing of applications and the substantial impact on SME growth and sustainability. So we could share at home, we could add African Bank. African Bank, known for its commitment to inclusive banking and empowerment, presents a unique opportunity for collaboration. Notably, African Bank's shareholders include the South African Reserve Bank and major local banks, right? So reflecting a blend of public and private interests aligned with national development goals, this mix of shareholders positions African Bank as a strategic partner in reaching out to underserved SMEs. So the collaboration can be modeled on the German approach, where SEDFA could provide guarantees or partial guarantees to loans issued by African Bank to SMEs. This reduces the risk for African Bank, encouraging them to extend more credit to smaller, potentially riskier businesses. Additionally, leveraging African Bank's existing infrastructure and community relationships can facilitate the broader distribution of financial resources, ensuring that support reaches a diverse range of small enterprises. So we recommend establishing a structured partnership between SEDFA and African Bank, where risk is mitigated through government backing, similar to the German model. This partnership should focus on creating accessible SME-friendly loan products with streamlined application processes to ensure quick and efficient funding. Adopting a collaborative approach inspired by the successful international models can significantly enhance the effectiveness of the National Small Enterprise Amendment Bill. By drawing on the strength of entities like African Bank and aligning with proven strategies like Germany's KfW model, we can create a more supportive and dynamic ecosystem for SMEs in South Africa. Right now, the bill also talks about financial and non-financial support services. The loophole there is that while it recognizes the importance of these services, it lacks a detailed framework for implementation. All right? So there's a prime example of an effective non-financial support in South Africa. We have here the School of Scale program. It is led by Vusi Thembekwayo. This program exemplifies how local initiatives can significantly contribute to the development of SMEs. Here are the key features of the School of Scale. They have expert mentorship. So the program offers access to industry expert mentors, providing SMEs with guidance and insights specific to their business challenges and industry trends. They have online community and networking. So the participants have access to an online community which facilitates networking, peer learning, and shared experiences among SMEs. They also have a dedicated account executive. Each SME is paired with an account executive who works closely with them throughout the program, offering personalized support and ensuring that the specific needs of each business are met. So the rationale for emulating the School of Scale model, this program's approach aligns perfectly with what SMEs in South Africa need, not just financial assistance, but also structured, personalized guidance to professionalize and scale their operations. The success of such programs lies in their ability to offer practical, hands-on support that directly impacts the growth trajectory of small businesses. So we recommend that the SEDFA could incorporate elements from the School of Scale program, establishing similar initiatives that offer mentorship, customer community support, and individualized business guidance. Collaboration with the private sector leaders and experts, as seen in the School of Scale program, can bring valuable expertise and resources to government-led SME support initiatives. Recognizing the diversity of SMEs in sectors like ICT, agriculture, and manufacturing, it's crucial to tailor these programs to address the unique challenges and opportunities of each sector. So by embracing both international best practice and successful local models like the School of Scale, we can significantly enhance the support structure for SMEs in South Africa. Such comprehensive support, encompassing financial and non-financial aspects, is essential for nurturing a robust and dynamic small business ecosystem. Now we are talking about the monitoring and evaluation. The bill's focus on annual reporting doesn't offer a comprehensive picture of the ongoing impact and effectiveness of the programs initiated by SEDFA. Singapore's method of monitoring and evaluation of SME support programs, it stands out for its thoroughness and effectiveness. They have regular feedback loops. So the model involves frequent feedback sessions with SMEs to gauge the impact of various support initiatives, often conducted on a quarterly basis. They are utilizing a robust data collection and analysis. This system allows for real-time tracking of program outcomes and swift adaptations to meet evolving needs. And then lastly, stakeholder engagement. Their regular engagement with a wide range of successes.
You may wrap up, my little girl. Your time is up.
Yes, I am wrapping up. All right. So as I am saying, my last point that I wanted to make, and I cannot finish this speech without talking about it, is the government's role in business growth, right? We have a government that always says they support local entrepreneurs, they are encouraging innovation, but it's our government that actually favors and prefers international brands. Case in point, Premier Panyaza Lisuti, right now, there's a deal that they did to create jobs with Uber Eats. Why not find a local entrepreneur and we call it, for example, Kasi Rice? Why not use them? So our government, if it comes also in the ICT sector, you always tell us about Microsoft, the SAP, Oracle, and all of that. So what you are doing, you are turning us into resellers. So therefore, you are starting our creative nature, our entrepreneurship skills or spirit, and our innovative spirit. But America, China, and all the other countries, they are prioritizing local products, local services. It's only here in South Africa where even when you go with a solution to a government department, they tell you to tender. Or they will tell you, you have to be a gold member of Microsoft. So what
your time is up, Lady Girl. You will submit your presentation to our secretary. We appreciate that. Thank you.
All right. Thank you so much.
Next presenter, Bracken.
Chair is going to be South African Institute of Race Relations by Jim Tully.
Okay. Over to you, Mzuli.
Okay, it seems as if she is not online. Can we then go to Sandra? Sandra Sefularo from NAFCOC.
Over to you, Sandra.
Okay, Sandra doesn't show. Let's go to Sakoba Atiswa. Sakoba.
Hello, hello.
Hello.
I'm not sure whether Patiswa is here, but I'm here. This is my backup to her. Deboko Pari speaking.
Okay. You can. It seems as if she's not or is not online. You can post the pardon.
Okay. No, thanks, Chair. And let me also. Thank the committee for inviting us to make a presentation on behalf of the South African Cooperative Banking Association, which is a secondary cooperative representing the cooperative banking sector in South Africa, a newly formed, a predecessor to the National Cooperative Association, whose predecessor has been NACFISA, the South African National Cooperative Association of Corporate Financial Institutions of South Africa. We have the presentation, but for now, what I will do is I will quickly email it the presentation as well as the written one. We've got both the slides and the written presentation. Our presentation is simple, Chair. What we're saying basically is that overallly, we've got overall comments about the bill and specific recommendation on the bill that we are making, comments and recommendations. Basically, there are only two recommendations that we are making. The first thing that we say in the overall comments is that the bill as it is like a puzzle if we are to consider its cooperative perspective or approach. That there are, important missing pieces. And as such, it doesn't fit together properly. And, it's like trying to merge two different puzzles, one representing the cooperatives and the other representing enterprises without considering the unique characteristics and the needs of each. So the result is that, as we will show, there is a lot of confusion in this bill and it's incomplete picture that doesn't fully support or address the role of the new agency in supporting cooperatives. So leaving those gaps and important sections unresolved, it's a problem. And therefore, you know, you'll just need to have a puzzle. You need a puzzle that, you know, all the right pieces are created to provide a complete and a coherent, you know, image. So the legislation should consider the necessary elements and also engage with the stakeholders. As we say in our presentation, the sector in particular has not been adequately consulted, in fact, consulted at all. Yet there are major implications, not just for cooperative banking sector, but the entire cooperative sector as a whole. So we plead that, you know, engagement on this is very, very necessary to address these missing gaps that we have identified. And that the bill itself, if it's as it is in its current format, it could have implications for the cooperative sector, particularly the cooperative banking sector. And it raises concerns about marginalization that the sector has been notifying for some time. For instance, that the bill fails to consider the new amendments to the cooperative legislation. Specifically, as you know, Chair, that only in 2019, the President proclaimed a new law on cooperatives, the Amended Act, which was passed in 2013. But nothing in the bill so far give us any confidence that they have taken into account these new amendments in the cooperative legislation, specifically the one relating to cooperative development agency. So this bill is about an agency. You've got a Cooperatives Act that talks about a cooperative development agency. Clearly, that is a big line of a conflict with these provisions in the bill. And lastly, just to say that in overall comments that, you know, the development of cooperative policy and legislation in South Africa has involved an extensive discussions and engagements and stakeholders, including through NETLAC. Stakeholders that include the sector itself being consulted, but also the trade union movement. They've been quite critical for advancing that. And to any changes that we need in legislation should respect, you know, that background and process, so that there is a proper consultations, which does not appear in this case, that, you know, we are just rushing the legislation without adequate consultation. Then what are the specific comments we're making? They are basically two. One is the way in which it is crafted, the says small enterprise, I'll say quote and unquote, in relation to cooperatives. It is important, we say, Chair, that there's a need for the bill to acknowledge that there are clear differences between cooperatives and the definition of small enterprise as in the Act, as proposed in the bill, which is a completely new a term that is used. So recognition of a cooperative and a small enterprise is important because they differ in terms of ownership structure, but more importantly, size. There are other differences like decision-making, objectives, the fact that cooperatives prioritize member benefits versus profit generation. So while cooperatives and small enterprises are driven by entrepreneurship, economic activities, they've got distinct characteristics and purposes. Now, nowhere in this bill do you see any difference within this. Actually, co-ops are being reduced to small enterprise, again, ignoring that the mandate of the department is to promote small enterprises and cooperatives, because cooperatives can be of different size. So if you call this bill or this new agency small enterprise, you are literally clubbing every co-op irrespective of its size under the term small enterprise. And that is legally and also programmatically problematic to do that. So we do in our presentation highlight these differences. And therefore, the recommendation is as follows, that it is inappropriate to use the term small enterprise to encompass all cooperatives, as it can lead to further marginalization of the cooperatives themselves. So the recommendation clearly says government must recognize the law, that the law supports all types of cooperatives irrespective of their size, and it should be
Bracking to Mdluli. Is he kicked out? Has he been kicked out? Bracking? Bracking.
Chairperson,
can you hear me?
Chairperson. Mr. Padu is trying to come back to the session, Chair. He was kicked out.
What about King?
I'm not sure.
It seems as if he has been kicked out too.
I'm not sure. Maybe he's load shedding on his side.
Yeah.
Mr. Padu, are you back? Mr. Padu? Chair, maybe in the interest of time, I would propose that we go ahead. Maybe Mr. Padu will come back because he was already wrapping up.
Yeah, he was wrapping up, but would like to have his presentation. Must send it to us. If you have got his numbers, just tell him that he must send his presentation, more especially want those recommendations. We had all those gaps he's alluding to. I think this consultation is based on that we need participants to beef up the bill. So we must come up with more recommendations than more criticism. So call him and tell him that please let him forward that presentation to us. And we'll have further engagement with him.
Thank you, Chairperson.
Thank you. Who's speaking?
Then the next one on the agenda, Chairperson, was Mr. Parks from COSATU.
Okay. Can you invite him for us?
Mr. Parks? He's in the platform, Chairperson. I'm not sure if he's trying to unmute. Mr. Potts?
Hi. Good afternoon, Chair. Yes, I'm here. Sorry, a bit of connectivity for a second, but I'm here.
We can see you. We can now close your video. Thank you.
Thanks. Chair, I can put our presentation up if I can be given hosting rights.
Small, are you able to give him a hosting right?
Yeah, no, I don't have Chairperson. I'm not sure if they are still with Mr. Depardieu or
let me try.
Anyone can try that to assist us, please. Want to see this presentation from Kosat?
Raking, I'm sure he went to the bathroom. I'm sure he's back now. Raking.
Okay, no, Braking is back, Chairperson. Thank you.
Braking, Mr. Pass is on the platform. Can you give him sharing rights, please?
The other
chap disappeared, and he disappeared with his recommendations, and his recommendations are very, very few. Could you please request him to write more recommendation on each and every gap which they have observed? That's my request as the chairperson. Thank you.
Okay. Sorry, Chair. I had just jumped to the loom. I was pressed. Sorry. It's all now.
It's Mr. Cox from COSAT. He's on the platform. He's waiting for sharing rights from your good friend.
Can you open your mic, Mr. Cox?
He did, but
I'm here.
Okay.
Yes, I'm so worried.
Sorry for that. Thank you. We are having the co-hosting right, Mr. Parks.
Okay. No, thanks, Chair. Yeah, thanks to colleagues. Just uploading it quickly. Okay. No, thanks, Chair. So it's basically the joint submission or presentation by COSATU and our affiliate, SACTU, Southern African Congress of Clothing and Textile Workers Union, which has done a lot of work around cooperatives. There's a lot of experience around small businesses. So, Chair, look, I think we do note the bill, and we do kind of welcome the objectives overall. But I think, as a previous presenter had mentioned, we are a bit concerned that this bill didn't come to NEDLAC for the normal task team engagement, which is a requirement of the NEDLAC Act that any legislation which deals with socio-economic issues is meant to go to NEDLAC for engagements before coming to Parliament. So that's a concerning part there. So we do fear that, if it's fine to say, okay, the department, let it go through, etc., but it creates a precedent in future that other departments too could also simply decide to bypass NEDLAC, which is a statutory requirement when it comes to socio-economic or labour legislation that go into Parliament. We're also concerned, Chair, because of the absence of engagements between government, business and labour, and civil society organisations in NEDLAC, we do think many clauses in the bill are still a little bit vague or unclear and would have benefited from some tightening or just clarity in some instances. But we have a few kind of key concerns around the bill. One is in terms of compliance or labour legislation. The bill doesn't really make reference to ensuring that the lending practices of the new agency would be required to support the principles of decent work or compliance with our labour legislation. We fear that, Chair, if the bill allows the agency to lend money to companies which don't comply with labour laws, in effect we'll be endorsing using public money, public funds, to support companies which undermine our labour laws. And so we do feel that quite clearly as COSATU that the state is obliged to support and uphold the rule of law, and including our labour laws, so they shouldn't be seen to be acting in any manner or supporting anybody who doesn't do so. We have a real problem, Chair, as COSATU and SACTU, especially around bogus cooperatives, companies who masquerade as cooperatives. And we don't think the bill really does make any efforts to try to tackle this problem. And we have a real problem with bogus cooperatives. Actually, in reality, they're actually just normal businesses, but they masquerade as cooperatives solely for the purpose of trying to avoid paying workers minimum wage or to comply with other labor laws. In reality, many of these bogus co-ops are actually controlled by the employer, and they then simply just choose to hire and fire and discipline workers and make all the business and operational decisions. So in fact, it becomes a front to undermine our labor laws and other company laws. We have seen quite a few of these co-ops also being used to engage in criminal activities. So for example, you have some clothing companies falsely registering as cooperatives, especially in KwaZulu-Natal, and actually engaging in real criminal behavior, from human trafficking to gross labor, human rights abuses, etc. We've seen time and again, even recently, four workers dying in a factory fire in a bogus crop in Newcastle, where in that instance, in many other instances, the employer, the owner of the co-op, actually just locks the workers in the factory overnight and then goes away. So we would have hoped that the bill would have taken some serious and significant steps to try to prevent institutions from abuse, from abusing this law, and just simply seeking to take advantage of the loopholes. Then, Chair, around the issue of the reconfiguration of the state, we have seen some discussions. We know it's not finalized, but I think there's been a clear commitment by the President that post 2024 elections, the 7th administration would look at consolidating the state, reintegrating different departments. There was some talk, we appreciate it's not finalized, but there was some talk about reintegrating the department with the Department of Trade and Industry, where it originally came from. So, Chair, we do fear that, you know, with this kind of rushing to get done before the elections, we're not going to be making some things more complicated afterwards. Then the issue of the unfair trading practices. So, Section 17, we do feel that its ambiguities is quite a bit concerning. So, it provides for powers for the minister to give to the ombud to deal with certain prohibited practices. But we feel some of these are just a bit quite vague and that could potentially be misinterpreted or abused. So, for instance, Section 17.2 outlines that small enterprises have the right to trade and transact freely, including the right to accountability from large enterprises. It's not clear what exactly does this mean. And again, if we had a network engagement, then many of these issues could have been addressed. 17.3H defines prohibitive practices, including unfair exclusion and compliance requirement practices. So, Chair, if this is left kind of vague, it could be argued by some that, well, compliance or labor laws or bargaining council agreements is exclusionary. So does that exclude these small businesses from these opportunities? So we feel that they may argue that and then hence undermine our labor laws or collective bargaining agreements. 17.4a guides the minister and the ombud to declare practices prohibited and flags the following principles as harmful and therefore needing to be prohibited. So harming the sustainability and competitiveness of small enterprises, unreasonably prejudicing them, unfairly affecting any small enterprise. And again, Chair, because it's vague, it doesn't make any reference to compliance or labor laws. These could, we fear, will be used as a rallying call by some small enterprise owners to seek to ignore, undermine, or labor laws of collective bargaining agreements, etc. And part of the reason, Chair, we're particularly set around the collective bargaining agreements is that they provide certainty for industries, for workers. They try to uplift those at the bottom. And you'll find at times in the collective bargaining, like, for example, the clothing and textile bargaining councils, that employees do go through a lot of compromise to achieve it. And if you're to allow some who will say, well, I'm a small enterprise, let me not be included, it creates an unfair advantage for them against other employers who have chosen to make compromise and to embrace collective agreements. So we really need to have a situation where everybody is included, not people can just simply choose to ignore. Chair, on the governance issues, there are some areas of concern. 11.5 says a period for 3 years for the minister to review the function of the board. We feel that's a little bit too long given the performance of some of our boards and our entities. We think it's maybe perhaps be a little bit shorter, as 24 months or 2 years. It says advocacy functions for the ombud. We're not sure, is that the role of an ombud? Are they not meant to do more regulatory work? But we, you know, it could be useful that in terms of they do some public awareness, but just to get some clarity in that regard in the bill. There are some issues in terms of 17J, which says other prospects for which an ombud refers cases to court. So part of this assessment, it should take the speed of resolution into account. What are the timeframes? For that, it refers to the 17K4 and IL2, the necessary changes, but doesn't actually specify what are these changes meant to be. In terms of the normal kind of disestablishment of the entity, but doesn't indicate what is the recourse for any claimant which might already be in the system in that scenario. Chapter 17T, you know, provides conditions in which a person can ask the ombud for copies of determinations. The ombud may charge fees, but again, doesn't kind of give any kind of criteria for those fees. We would want it to be, we would assume it would be a standard fee. And 17X provides for collaboration between interagencies and so forth, but doesn't kind of give a mandate or objectives. What does this collaboration meant to entail? And that could just be an issue of tightening up. And I think kind of lastly on this governance issues is around the DG must, under 19.3, conduct a review timelessly, but again, there's no kind of clear time frames, and maybe that might be useful to have some sort of time frames. And again, the minister has the power under Section 20 to provide for thresholds for classifications for SMMEs, but perhaps it would also be useful to have some sort of consultation process like you normally do with regulations. So I think, Chair, just in conclusion, just as Kofato was back to, we are a little bit concerned that we appreciate ministers are keen to get legislation done as you wrap up the sixth administration, but we feel that we are rushing it a little bit, we're cutting a little bit too close, partly because we've not gone to NEDLAC. We think it would have been quite helpful if there had been a NEDLAC because you would have enriched the issues, we would have had a lot of engagements. We would have had a bit of a collective ownership between government, business, civil society, and organized labor. That might have helped to address many of the ambiguities in the bill, might have helped to address certain vagueness and to avoid misinterpretations and legislative conflicts. So, Chair, we're also not sure beyond integrating a few entities into one, what is the rush to getting things done when you have about 16 weeks left in the parliamentary calendar before Parliament adjourns for the elections, most likely. And I propose a chair, it may not be a popular one in the department, but we really feel it would have been better have to refer this bill back to the NEDLAC for proper engagement and then come with a better draft, less ambiguous bill once the 2024 elections are concluded. But let me stop there, Chair, and hope we've kept to the time frame. And thanks to the Chair for giving us space to consult and factor. Thanks, Chair.
Thank you, Mr.
Papps.
After the very same sentiments, we acknowledge the concerns, but this is part of consultation by the committee. Sorry. I would like also yourselves to assist us, the committee, by those gaps, those points, to beef up the bill. There's a good. Mr. Park, thanks for your presentation. We'll request that you also beef up the bill by reflecting all those recommendations. Braking, can we have the next presenter?
Thank you, Chair. I think, can we recognize Mr. Pardue has come back since there's still time, these other two did not show up to finish his recommendations.
Okay.
The one was kicked out by the system.
All right.
Mr. Pardue?
Yes. No, thanks, Chair, for this.
There was a concern that you can show your face slightly and then you proceed, because you can see maybe your friend which is weak.
Yes. Yeah, I am. Hello. Yeah. And, yes, Chair, I was not sure where I was, but because I kept talking, thinking that I'm still online.
You were busy with recommendations, and your recommendations were few. My remarks was that I need more recommendations than more gaps. Those gaps must allow you that these are our findings, these are our recommendations, because our main purpose of consulting you is to make sure that we beef up this bit. So we appreciate your presentation. You were now on recommendations where you stated evenly that you have got only two. So my argument is that you can't come up with two recommendations. Meanwhile, you have identified a lot of gaps. That was the comment from the chairperson, and then you disappeared. So I'm happy that you are back. I believe you are bringing those more recommendations now. So I'm allowing you to conclude the recommendations. Thank you.
No, thanks, Chair. And actually, under each recommendations, there are two or three bullets, which means I've got more than just, because it's a recommendation with regard to the bill versus the Cooperatives Act. So that recommendation, we are mentioning three things there that needs to happen. For instance, we say the new agency should not solely focus on small enterprise development as defined currently, but should encompass cooperative development. So then the bill must reflect that. The bill should also address the implications of the Cooperatives Act as amended, the implications of this bill on the Cooperatives Act as amended in 2013, especially the CDA, Cooperative Development Agency, to avoid marginalization of the cooperative sector and its relation to CBDA. Chair, I'm sure you will agree with me, and I've been one who always attend your committee sessions and reports from government all the time. When they mention of small enterprise, you'll find that a lot of that in the final analysis are companies and co-ops are clubbed together with these companies in the name of small enterprise. So it's a very, very serious point that it's not just a use of language. It's to recognize the differences and reflect those differences even in law so that they are not. So because of those missing gaps, which we say needs to be addressed, we are saying that the bill should address that to avoid a confusion. That's much of my presentation. I hope the recommendation one was also captured because I don't remember when, but I've got the slides, Chair, which I will share with the team, including the narrated document, the Word document of the presentation. So on behalf of SACOBA, the South African Cooperative Banking Sector, thanks once again for giving us time to make our comments and our voice heard on this important matter. Thanks.
Thank you so much. Thank you so much. I'm happy you are empowering us. This committee is in support of cooperatives. Hence, we had to go to Germany and learn about their model. I believe your submission will strengthen this bit. We are together with you. Thank you so much. And we'll appreciate the slides to be submitted to the secretary. Thank you. Ebra King, this was the last. Can we go back to our agenda?
Yes, Chairperson, because there's the other one. They couldn't turn up. I think they couldn't turn up.
But I will request that you check with them. It might be the issue of network so that they may be able to present their presentation even if they did not have that opportunity to make their oral presentation. Let's go back to our agenda so that I can allow members to ask clarity-seeking questions if they are there.
Can you see it, Chair?
Nothing on the screen, Bracking.
There's nothing?
Yes. Yes, it reflects agenda, but the agenda is not on the screen.
Can you see it now?
Yeah, I can see it. It's for anyone who wants to get clarity on the presentation in the form of question. I'm now allowing members to do so. We had eight presentations. So while asking for clarity-seeking questions, one should mention or direct the question to a particular presenter. It will assist me to lead the discussion.
So far there's a hand from Ms. Matulelo.
Oh, Honorable Matulelo, I believe you heard me. Over to you, baby.
Thank you, Chairperson. Greetings to the presenters and the all honorable members and the secretariat and everyone that is in here. Firstly, I would like to say, Chair, I didn't want to argue with the setup type of a meeting, but I could attest that it's practically impossible to have two important meetings, Parliament and this meeting, at the same time. I just wanted to put that next time we must make sure that we don't clash with the two, because you can't switch off the other one and listen to the other one, because they are both important. One. Two, I'm going straight to all presenters to ask the Chairperson if they attended as we were embarking on the public in the whole South Africa. We did go to all provinces. Did they go and attend there, or they only got this opportunity here only? Because the way they are presenting it, it seems as if they have got many different views than the public that we were located with. Because, Chairperson, also, I didn't hear them touching a very important part of this bill, more especially the ombuds, where they can also give the recommendations there, as other people in the public were putting it clear that there must be a tribunal also on the bill, where we will go out and do some EBs and take these problems from the people. So that's my few questions, Chairperson. I just want to know, because I'm concerned, if these representatives, all of them, did they go and attend our public participation? Thank you, Chairperson.
Thank you, Honorable Matulelo. You were basing your argument to all of them. Any other hands, Braking?
Yes, Chair.
Who's then?
Honorable Jacobs.
Okay, Honorable Jacobs.
And then there's also Ms. Kumo. I think maybe she wanted to say something, but will give members.
Ms. Kumo is from where? It's from which
the one was presenting. Yeah, that's why I'm saying we'll make
no. We'll give them chance to respond to questions. It's members' time now.
So, I don't know whether can I just get in here, or maybe the Ms. Matulela would want to be responded to by the presenters. But what I wanted to direct and make members understand is that there are two ways of submissions. Remember that we made the adverts on the national radio and on the provincial. So now these are two separate procedures that we follow. We make the public hearings, and then for those who make the written submission and also want request to make the oral submission. So that is the opportunity. So it does not mean that we have to be in a public hearing and be in this presentation. So I just wanted to explain that. then they will also respond the way they would like to respond. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you. Honorable Jacobs.
Yeah, greetings, and we want to thank everybody for the presentation that they've made. As the portfolio committee, we appreciate all the inputs from all these stakeholders. Chair, I think there's some useful inputs, and I think from our side, we will have to process these inputs. Chair, I think also just if I can address my fellow members, you know, we have Parliament and we have this this bill of importance. So I'm also asking our fellow members just to be very flexible. It is that time of the year where we have to push quite through. So I am suggesting I don't have clarity-seeking questions, but I think as members we will process all the inputs, and we thank everybody that has made time and effort to come on board. Thank you, Chairperson.
Thank you. Any other hand?
No, Chair.
Okay. I will now give chance to presenters, although one was already ready. We may invite her to respond. Maybe she wanted to respond.
This is Kumo again. Oh, I thought we, we have responded to the Ombud service query, but we will send it through with our presentation. So I just wanted to answer that part. But we have it and we will send it through. And not only do we have it, we also have steps on how to go about it. All right. Thank you so much.
Thank you so much. That will assist us because we need those inputs. In fact, the bill, if a bill it has been crafted, it's a raw material, it needs flesh. So we are trying to put flesh on it so that it becomes rich. Any other respond? More special or not? Also, Honorable Jacobs has indicated. Mr. Parks, do you have something to say before I address you? I can see that you are not happy about the department, but you must understand our role as the portfolio committee. If we can indicate it that this thing has been hanging for 8 years, and if we can share with you what we got on the ground, I don't think that there is time to, there is still time to wait. Our people are dying of hunger. I want to align myself with the first presenter who quoted also the issue of discrimination, who quoted the constitution. All of you, I know that you are on top of it, but what we got from the 9 provinces was really painful. What we will need from your good self is to advise us accordingly in terms of the constitution, so that at the end of the day, we are all happy. We are happy, but allow us to reflect to you that this thing is long overdue. Let's try to address those gaps. We're not rushing. It's long overdue. After all, we had our own bill as the portfolio committee, but we had to rescind it and take and align ourselves with the with this one from the department. So yours is to beef up this bill before us. Nothing else. Over to you. I'm not blocking you.
Okay. All right. Thank you, Chair. Thanks. Look, we do appreciate, you know, the agency of the government departments which want to conclude work before an election. In fact, we have been putting pressure on departments since last year that let's get legislation done. You know, unfortunately, many departments, and it's across every single department, they do this every single time, and it puts Parliament into a crisis, puts all of us into a crisis where they wait for 4 years. And then as it's, you know, the final year, even beyond the final like deadline for submission, then the parties start dumping bills at Parliament. And I think it creates a problem because they then kind of put almost a gun to Parliament's head, to stakeholders' head, to say, no, either we get the bill done, don't touch it, otherwise you're undermining objectives. And that creates huge amounts of problems. And I think that's why every time we have elections, you know, the Speaker will write to Cabinet to say, you have a deadline of April the year before an election. And yet you find departments bringing bills in September, August, etc. to Parliament. So that's the one difficulty, because now we understand the pressure of members of Parliament. You have Parliament rising 8th of December for the Christmas holidays. Then next year you have maybe 2 months after Sona to wrap up last work. And it just creates a very unhealthy situation. And we've seen time and again, Chair, when Parliament is forced to kind of rush things, cut corners, etc., either drafting mistakes take place, then amendments have to come back, or whoever's aggrieved, you know, whichever organization is aggrieved from society, they go to the Constitutional Court and then they win it time and again. And that creates a problem because it embarrasses all of us. And then it actually delays necessary bills for 5 years trying to clean up the mess. And she also, we had also raised the point that, you know, NEDLAC is not a random organization out there. It's a statute, it's a creature of Parliament. It's created by the NEDLAC Act of Parliament. And the Act is quite clear that all departments are required to table any legislation which affects labor laws or socioeconomic issues to go to NEDLAC before to engage. And time and again, you find many departments choose to ignore that. And that creates a dangerous precedent. The benefit of NEDLAC to Parliament is that when a bill comes to Parliament, it would already have been enriched in any concerns, areas of concern by business or by labor or community would have been addressed already, and you would have then a collective ownership. So that hasn't happened. The department didn't do that. And hence, we've come with a lot of things, many of which are actually just simple questions. What is the intention here? Many of which could actually be clarified by just a simple tightening of a clause or just extending a sentence to explain something a bit better, etc. But if we have our questions and we're a little bit privileged to kind of engage in legislation frequently, one can imagine more so that a departmental official or an entity, loan approval officer down the road will have even more questions. One can imagine that a small business owner would have even more questions down the road, and that doesn't benefit anybody. And hence, we've tried to raise, as we think it is a concern, we can, you know, do a supplementary submission to the Portfolio Committee with some proposal about what we think could be tightened up to try to address the concerns. We do pressure, there's huge pressure for the committee, so we can try to do that in the next few days. But yeah, I think that's it in a nutshell, Chair, because our experience here is that cooperatives, we all support them. We also bought SMEs, but time and again, we've seen many unscrupulous owners seeking to abuse laws and to abuse those statuses within law to undermine labor laws, undermine public procurement legislation requirements, et cetera, et cetera. So I think that's been the thrust of our concerns. I think just into the last question, in terms of, you know, the Ombudsman and its tribunal, look, we support those institutions. I think they're quite critical to address SMEs' concerns. But I think it's about just tightening up the powers and the responsibilities and what is the mandate in that regard. Other legislation does do it, so we just think it would have been useful to do so in this one as well, Chair. But I think our point was that, you know, one supports the broad objectives, but we thought the way the bill has been rushed, and we appreciate the 8-year journey, that there's a lot of clauses which could have been better off if they had been tightened, if there was some clarity, and if they could have been enriched as well. But we can do a supplementary written submission to try to say, specific proposal we're looking at, and maybe that can also help members of the committee as well. But yeah, thanks so much, Chairperson.
Thank you, Mr. Parks. You must know that I'm a member of SATO. I'm a teacher by profession. I know that you are not just a small boy to tackle. You are big tankers, I know. But I appreciate you really understand our frustration. So we will appreciate all those submissions. Any other taker from presenters? If none, can we now move to the next item? Key issues for consideration in the bill from written submissions. I think these were the issues which you were trying to reflect while answering those clarity seeking questions. But I will appreciate if they can be itemized and forwarded to our secretary so that we don't leave any advice from your good selves. Content advisor, can you lead us on this one? Mr. Gumede?
Chair, I'm not sure why this was put on the agenda, because it's not ready yet. The content advisor is busy with the public hearings report. This item is not ready for presentation yet, Chair.
Thank you, Mr. Gumede. Let us take it out and consider what will be infected by our presenters for today to beef up your report. I agree with you. In that order, I may release our presenters. Thank you so much. Please do as I'm requesting. We're not undermining you and we'll never try to undermine you, but bear with us. We have got a lot of pressure. We've got a lot of frustration on the ground. Our report will reflect all the hearings we got. As Honorable Matulele has indicated, what she was trying to indicate is that you were not part and parcel of the public hearing on the ground. I was trying to emphasize that we had a lot of crisis on the ground. Hence, the merging of the three entities needs to be fine-tuned. And we are allowing that. Hence, these presentations. So I believe we are on the same page. We cannot move without your inputs. So your inputs are valid and they are critical. And we are going to respect them in any way where we'll ignore each and every submission, because it will seek to empower this bill. Because the purpose of the bill is to make sure that we are still within the rules of law. So as parliamentarians, people who are doing oversight, we will not like to be offside. We'll always want to be on the right track, because we know the consequences. So thank you so much for your submission. We really appreciate it. You may leave us as the portfolio committee so that we can finish our business.
I can't hear anything. I don't know if there's a sound problem.
No, it is quiet. But he is flagging the agenda, because the item which we requested to put in was the agenda so that we can adopt it. That's the only item left, Honorable Kruger. So the agenda is before us. Can you talk to it, Prakip?
Questions. And then the other session will just reserve them. We shall have to have a consultation with our legal advisor, who is also in the platform. So which then means we will have to sit as the management and discuss it before we bring it into the committee. I was just wanted to indicate that today we are here doing this oral hearings, as I explained when I was responding to Ms. Matulele, that we've got two sessions of public participation through the adverts that we make, and then we call those what national oral hearings, because not all people are expected to participate in the provincial public hearing. So those submissions are being received as they've been received, and then they are then being recorded. And for those who have indicated that they would like to make an input, then these that have been invited as is today. So this is the second part of public participation, which is the call it national oral hearings. And then tomorrow, then we'll be expecting the department to make some responses on some of the written submission that we have received and some of the public hearing submission. So the we're with the department in all the public hearings, so they might have some notes that they've taken, which then will shape also the bill as it has been brought. So those are so. We shall be having a meeting tomorrow, which is between 9:30 and 14 hours. So these are the items I'll request that we discuss them in the management together with the legal advisor. Thirdly, Chair, what I wanted to raise also is that the parliamentary program showed that the committee is supposed to debate the second reading of the bill on the 5th of December, which is next Tuesday. So I just wanted to put that in the minds of the members of the committee, and maybe some of the reasons that the meeting are so prepped, it's based on what has been shown in the parliamentary program. However, we still have to discuss as a management on the way forward. Thank you, Chair. I'm seeing two hands from Ms. Mathulelwa and Mr. Kruger.
Okay. Honorable Mathulelwa?
Thank you, Chairperson. I wanted just to raise that. Remember, the agenda was adopted, and then later we heard that the contract advisor was not ready with the report. I think the agenda was adopted with the presentation from their side. So I think we have to edit it. Okay, it was adopted with changes, something like that, Chairperson. Thank you.
Thank you, baby girl. I like you for that, my girl. And in future, you are right. Our officials, please try to, as usual, to make sure that our house is in order. Maybe Honorable Mathulelwa, I can apologize on their behalf. We didn't have management because we decided to have this session at 10 o'clock, and usually our management meeting is on Tuesday. So we did not have management, and I did not evenly, I was not able to check with them. We do a double check. We should have taken it out. So I'm trying to apologize on their behalf and also consider your input, Honorable Member. You are totally right. If we add an item, we adopt it. And if we suspend it, we must also correct it. I think you are in order. But bear with me. We don't usually do that. You know us. Thank you, Deb. Thank you, sis. Honorable Kruger.
Thank you, Jay. I see at the bottom of the screen, on Thursday between 9:30 and 1600, we will sit. Chairperson, we all know as members of parliament that on a Thursday morning, it's caucus of the parties. Most probably one of the most important meetings on the agenda of parliament, because that's where we need to discuss you know, party stance on certain issues, and seeing that the debate in Parliament is going to be next Thursday, we need to take this ball to our caucus and get some information from caucus. So I can't see that we can have this meeting at 9:30 tomorrow morning. Please, Chair, we must respect political parties.
Are you referring to Thursday?
I'm referring to Thursday, yeah. It was on the screen, and I see they moved it now, but it was on the screen. There you are.
Yeah,
9:30 to 1600.
Yeah, it is here, but Ibra King explained the reasons that we have been granted permission by the House Chairperson to can utilize the, all of us during that day we are having caucus. Maybe I can allow him to repeat what he said in the morning before we proceed with the meeting on that.
No, Madam Chair, I respect the Chairperson of Parliament to make a ruling and to put some urgency to this bill. But, I mean, Thursday mornings are political parties' time, and we must respect political parties' caucus time. There's no other... the Chairperson can't decide over the time for caucuses.
Bracken, can you repeat yourself?
Thank you, Chair. As per directive that we received and the application that we have made, it was that we committees that are busy with legislation, they can switch. And then now, hence I've said now, seeing that we didn't have a management meeting and this was coming from looking at what should be done up until the bill goes to the House, was based on that when we're crafting this amended program. Hence then I said for today we had this meeting, and tomorrow, because it's our meeting slot, we're going to have that item in the agenda. Then that is why I said I didn't want to show the Thursday and the Friday as well, because since we've said we're going to have a meeting as a management together with the legal advice, then those items or time for sitting might change based on our meeting with the management. However, though we've been granted an exemption to sit, consideration or whatever members may raise as concern, I think it shall be captured and be discussed in the management. So that is why then I said,
let us leave it at that level. We'll hear from you, and then we'll take a political decision after that, because we may even alter the time. We may utilize the late hours to respect those caucuses. So it's something which we can be able to deal with it, as much as we respect what Honorable Kruger is saying, because it affects, it cut across all political parties. So go and deal with it at management level. Thanks, Honorable Kruger, for having raised it. It will be taken care of. Other than that, we may say that we have noted the program, and then we'll hear from them, and then we'll take it from there. Agreed, Honorable Members? Silence means consent. I take that it is audible. I was audible. I believe we have come to the end of our program. The meeting stand adjourned. Wish you well. Go and prepare yourself properly. Invite those comments from those presenters which were with us today. so that they must beef up this bill. They cannot come here and cry. If we'll allow that, it will take years for the department or for the committee to pass any law. So let them beef up the bill rather than to cry. I'm happy that I was able to indicate to reflect that and also other honorable members. But thank you so much. The meeting's adjourned.